Hello and welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai. I'm joined this week by Mr. David Goss. On today's show, we chat survival for CF Montreal and the Whitecaps in the MLS playoff chase, Alphonso Davies magic at BMO Field, plus European roundup, and of course, all of your questions on the mailbag, Ask AFP. David, how are you, sir? It's just us two this week. I think it's fitting because I think Liverpool might have had one of their better weekends, and Mo Salah had maybe the best weekend ever, so we have to talk about it because Nick's not here. It feels kind of right almost. I'm not sure.
Well, what feels most right is the reason Nick isn't here is because he is covering curling to start the week.
The most Canadian thing he could do, right?
I feel Canadian knowing someone who's doing that. The fact that I can say this guy hosts this show with is currently out covering curling makes me so excited. So that's the highlight of my week. Just putting that out there.
I'm actually curious from an American's perspective, how well do you think curling does on television in Canada?
Well, I've been there when it's been on in the, what was it called? The tournament.
The Briar, possibly. The Briar or the Scott Tournament of Hearts.
There was something, Tim Hortons was sponsoring it, which I guess probably is.
Oh, wow. They do a lot.
Super shocking. But yeah, it was like on TV one time when I was up there, for MLS Cup. Maybe it was Olympic qualifying or something like that. That would make sense, right? Because it would be November MLS Cup and Olympics are in February. So yeah, so I would assume it does pretty well. Obviously, I'm a John Schuster guy because, you know, USA. Listen, sports we don't even care about. We just win gold medals in, so it's not a big deal. Have you ever curled?
I have, and it's one of the hardest things I've done. I have a lot of respect for good curlers. I mean, these people are Olympians or like top of the tops, but it's extremely hard. Like I've been to a couple of Bonspiels, which I think is like a curling tournament. Yeah, deep in the bag. And it is one of the harder things I've done. So big shouts to curling. It does well on TV is what I was going to say. It's pretty popular. So shouts to Nick for covering the beautiful game.
Do people like go like, is it like playing pool? Like billiards?
In the sense that there's like clubs?
Or like, I don't know if it's like, is that, do you join an
this is more like tennis to me.
Okay.
This would be more like a tennis club kind of thing. Or like you go to a certain area every week and you know it's usually the same people. Yeah, I would say it's that setup kind of, but it's definitely a social sport and people love it in Canada. And it's really fun. I mean, it's hard, but it's fun as well. But that's all coming up next on Curling Talk, brought to you by Space Monkey Productions.
We should.
I could talk curling all day.
We should really start this show. I've done it one time.
We should.
So I'm not pure American. I'm slightly Canadian. I one time went curling in Brooklyn. There's a place they do an intro to curling course once a week. And my friend was moving to Canada and we went.
Sounds crazily Brooklyn, by the way. Yeah, that sounds like the most Brooklyn thing.
Said that, I was like, whoa, here's a huge curveball. Guess what? In Brooklyn, they do this hipster thing. Yeah, fair. They also serve vegan poutine at the same time and made out of honeybees.
Next, they're going to tell me they have flannel shirts and vending machines, right? Just in case you need to get one quick on the go. All right. There was a lot of soccer, DG, and I mean, we're going to talk about all of it coming up, but maybe top line, what left you most spellbound leaving this October weekend?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say the game that stood out to me the most was Man U Leicester City, and just like, it's always different, but it's always the same, I guess. Yeah, it's a huge part of it.
Repeatability.
And it was like, and it was entertaining as a neutral. Like, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me if Man U wins or not. So I'm down for like four goals in the final 10 minutes of any game that I tune into. But that was the one that stood out to me, I think, the most. And I was on a family trip. So I had a bunch of stuff like up second screen over the course of the weekend. And that was the one where I was like, in 5 minutes, can we just go in 5 minutes? Like, I'm kind of paying attention here.
I was listening to the radio while watching that game because sometimes I just don't want to listen to the commentary. And I was listening to the BBC World Service and they were interviewing people from Zambia talking about Dhaka and how he would be the first player from Zambia to score in the Premier League. And he did. And I'm like, this is a crazy moment. Jamie Vardy's still there and he scores a banger. And he's one of the few guys left from that championship team. Like,
they showed Wes Morgan in the crowd on that championship team.
Amazing. I think the Salah goal was probably what I'll remember most. The other part is the Watford defender biting on the fake that no one believed he would actually shoot on. I'm still spellbound by that. I'm like, come on, man. I guarantee you've watched tape, aka videos on your phone of Salah doing that to a million people.
Also, if he shoots from that angle, that's okay. That's a savable shot from that angle. Do not bail out to block that shot. That's just bad defending, not taking away from Salah, but that is awful defending.
Will it make you feel better, or will it make us feel better if Newcastle is relegated?
Yeah, probably.
During this huge day. Wouldn't it be hilarious?
But for all the people who are like, oh my God, we're going to dance on their grave, they don't care. Again, none of this has to make money.
They don't care.
No, there's no like logic to anything that's about to happen. I actually, part of my weekend was saying bye to a friend who's moving to Saudi Arabia for 2 months to help put together the Formula One race. That's going to be there.
Wow.
Yeah. And it is absurd. They're building the course on the Red Sea. And it looks fairly ridiculous. So again,
is your friend bringing a burner phone or wiping all SIM card identities? So, what's happening here?
I don't even know how good they are at this. So this might get this person in trouble. But I just read the Mohammed bin Salman book, which I highly recommend for everyone. Having nothing to do with Newcastle or to do with Newcastle. Whatever you want. The writer is the New York Times bureau chief in the Middle East. He's a great writer. It is like a quick read for something that's dense, and it really explains the region, not just MBS's life or Saudi Arabia. It talks about how UAE is involved and how their royal family has influenced him and Bahrain and what they've done in Lebanon and all these different things. And so I recommended it. And then I was like, maybe you shouldn't have that book on your person. That might not end super well.
Not even the Kindle, not even an encrypted Kindle. Just be safe. All right. We will talk a lot more about soccer in a few minutes. But a reminder, we are on patreon.com/footballpodcast. We reached our first goal. Many thanks to the people that made that possible. A lot of you folks are in the Discord where we love talking to you all the time. It's really fun. So you get on the Discord if you join. You get the show ad-free. You get the show a bit early, too, when our wonderful production team gets this all ready to go out. So head on over to patreon.com/footballpodcast and join today. When we come back, a big weekend in MLS for the Canadian teams, life for Whitecaps, life for CF Montreal, and death for TFC coming up next.
Close, both passes just a little off. Kuipert has some room now. Kuipert will give it a ride! Up the post and in! Russell Kuipert! And the Caps are up a pair!
Welcome back to AFP. Bangers only for Rusty Kuipert. What a massive, massive result for Vancouver on Sunday night to close out the week that was in MLS. They knew that all the teams around them or ahead of them in the playoff race had won DG on Saturday, adding an extra layer of pressure for a squad that I've seemingly relished it slash just been able to get by, because I think Vanni Sartini would be the first to admit it wasn't super clean again against SKC, but they found a way because they usually do when Brian White's heading down wonderful passes to Ryan Gaul. There were Rusty Tybert's perfectly hitting a ball into the ground pass, a really good keeper, and then basically having their back line back together for the first time in a while. It worked, David, and I think the goalkeeper is where we wanted to start with the Whitecaps this week.
I think Maxime Crépeau is in the conversation for goalkeeper of the year, and it's for the second straight year. It's been a conversation geared around New England and Philly. Andre Blake has put his name, I think, out there as he's put his name out there as the best goalkeeper in CONCACAF, whether it's in international competition or club competition. Matt Turner's elevated his game and he's, you know, matched him at that level. And I think Matt Turner will probably win goalkeeper of the year just at this point on narrative alone.
He's coasting a bit, though.
Yeah. No, he's been poor. The second goal he gave up against Chicago was through his body. I watched it 5 or 6 times because
just like how did that go in?
I watched it live and I was like, oh weird, that took a deflection, you know, because you just assume Matt Turner is not going to give up a chance like that. And then I went back and watched it a couple times and finally came to the realization of like, oh wow, it went straight through his body. So yeah, he struggled, but Maxime Crépeau, he's been that way all year. Even when Vancouver was struggling, he was not. We've talked about him a ton with the Canadian national team that I think we both agree on pure quality. He's the best goalkeeper in the pool. Still acknowledging that Borjan holds a really strong place in this team and has value as well, especially as a leader and an emotional character. But Crépeau has been the best goalkeeper, and I think he's in that conversation. Is he the winner? I think the next 6 weeks will decide that a lot for me, of just if he can continue this and be the reason. I think fairly certain that this team makes it, because Vancouver, if they make the playoffs, there's going to be a lot of games where they can't give up goals. As much fun as they've been going forward, they're not explosive. And Crépeau will be a huge part of them making the postseason if he continues this form.
Do you think this lineup, or the one they started with against SKC, is the one that should lead them into these final five games? Because we talked about Cavallini a lot, we talked about Caicedo a lot, but it seemed like Dahomey in a more attacking role with Brian White and Gault could be that front three in these crunch games? Or do you go back to these other guys?
I think I go back to Caicedo, and I respect Dahomey a lot for... he didn't get a lot of touches in this game, and he worked really hard. Like, he continued to try and find the game, even though it wasn't played through him, even though it wasn't easy for him. So I respect what he's done a lot, and we've seen him play a wing back as well. Like, he's allowed himself to do what he needs for the team, but I think Caicedo is still a higher level player and a better chance creator, and it's a tough stretch. I think they play the Timbers, they play LAFC coming down this, and then I think they finish with Seattle on decision day. And I just think you need the quality that Caicedo brings on the field. So I would bring him back into the team. I think Brown worked out at left wing back and was phenomenal again. And Gaspar was pretty good at right wing back. And I like the three center backs as well. So I would leave the rest of that. Caicedo would be the one that I would look at bringing back into the team. It's wild. They showed Cavallini warming up when Brian White was getting assessed for a concussion. And then they brought Toshan Ricketts in later as the sub. Cavallini didn't even get off the bench. Devang, I don't know if he's the next option
up. I think we're done. I think we're done here. I think that might be it. And it speaks for itself, right? If you want to know, you would usually look at how the manager is using their subs. And I think he did really well using his subs in that game. And Vanny seems to know what he's doing in terms of pulling the strings. And it doesn't seem like Cavallini's option B or C. But Vancouver has done what they needed to do. They are really close, but remain outside of the playoffs. Because like I said, a lot of the teams around them kept winning. And yeah, the Galaxy finally won, which I think was unfortunate luck for them. Javian Brown, I feel like he's not far away from a Jamaica look. He can't be.
No, I think he's gotten called into camps too. I just don't think he's, right. I don't think he's appeared on a game day roster. But yeah, he's part of that conversation. It was a phenomenal pick by them. Yeah, he's got four appearances. So for Jamaica. Okay. But a lot of that hasn't been since he's been with Vancouver. I think it was even before. But yeah, he's been phenomenal. He's been the best draft pick in MLS, and now he's doing it on both sides. And, you know, he hits the left foot across for the opening goal. That sets up so that Zusi has to overplay him there, and he keeps coming back to his right comfortably. And this game was just fun. Devang, like, this is the fun team in MLS.
That place is really fun as an arena when things are going well, like we've said on the show in the past. So keep the good vibes rolling. This is a huge week for this club on the road, though. The next time we record, things could be very different, for better or for worse. Of course, they've got Portland away, San Jose away. It's doable, we shall see. Another Canadian team, very much in the hunt, CF Montreal. Honestly, the better team. I watched this game from beginning to end on the television on Saturday. Matt Komielewicz with his goal in the 33rd minute, early production from him. That was well taken, but the game was sloppy in the sense that it was wet, it was nasty. I thought Montreal was far better, though, as a team. And yet, I was left wondering, David, if the frailties that we saw, the way they conceded, a couple of set-piece disasters, Pantemis not covering himself in glory, like they needed some magic at the end. But the magic at the end left me thinking that no matter how well they played in the game, it's going to require some sort of flukiness like this to get a team like Montreal over the line into the playoffs. Is that unfair, do you think?
Yeah, I do. Because I look at it differently, which was against the second or third best team in the East, they were the better team. And maybe they didn't have the killer instinct they needed to have to finish this game off earlier, to not have to come from behind and get a tie. And maybe it should have been 3 points at home is a way you can sort of walk away from this one. But I looked at a team that knew who they were against one of the best teams in the league and were able to play the game they wanted to play. And they get a goal from Mihailovic in a player who none of us were talking about 3 months ago. Like, they just signed him. He's a youth international, right? So I think it shows me that Montreal still has a culture where they're getting results or they're getting performances out of every player. And in filling in for Mason Toy up top in Kyoto, when he's been hurt, they've been able to use a lot of different pieces. Here's the run. It's Orlando City midweek. Then it's Toronto next weekend, Red Bulls, Houston, and then Orlando City again. That's the MLS run for CF Montreal. Now, don't forget, they've got a semifinal against Forge coming up in that run, which they have to push resources towards, because you can't afford to just lay down for a semifinal and give that to Forge, hoping you make the playoffs, especially with an opportunity at CCL next year on the line. So it's going to be tough. And I get your point of they're probably right there and they need something to get them over the line. But I think there's enough quality in this group to do that.
And in their defense as well, I think if you look at some of the teams around them, New York City FC, if I look at them as a cohesive group, I like CF Montreal's chances as a unit right now better. The way they're playing under Wilfred Nancy and like the belief and the bind and that Ibrahim goal, the very death and the Kessie cross. Like, I love to see that. That was awesome. But I think the way they were setting up for the Kai Wagner goal, you could tell something awful was going to happen. And it did. And yeah. I was like, I don't know if this is a sustainable thing going forward. But it kind of makes sense that they're in seventh, because we've seen obvious positives and then obvious problems, perhaps is a good way of saying it.
And I've been complimentary of I think, the way that Montreal's put this team together and built this group. But I don't think anything can stand out more about the history of Montreal than this conversation so far, this show, which is Maxime Crépeau is goalkeeper of the year and James Pantemis struggles when Maxime Crépeau came out of the Montreal Academy and they just didn't give him opportunities and they didn't care. And there was this 39-year-old French guy that could come in and this player. And in reality, if they had Crépeau this year, they're probably 4 points better at a minimum. And they're a solid playoff team. And so this is a club that's still trying to make up for the sins of their past.
They will play TFC in a huge game this coming Saturday. TFC will have nothing to play for except the future, which does look kind of bleak these days. Let's be honest. Their playoff hopes were extinguished against Atlanta, 2-0, BMO Field, Saturday night, sparse crowd. I mean, huge night as well in the city. I think the Leafs are playing as well, so not surprising. The weather wasn't great, but I don't think the crowds have been great for a while these last few weeks. It's funny, like, you saw the scuffle at the end, David, and like some of the players who got up for it are kind of the players that have been getting up for it for a while now. Mm. And not to say that everyone has given up, but it kind of felt like the players that really still were up for these games are still up for them. And it's positive to see Richie be one of them. But I'm curious, maybe Javier Perez talking about like getting Shaquille Marcus ready more minutes and this kind of stuff is positive. I understand that. I'm looking at the brightness for a second, but to look at the negative, I'm curious, what do you think is the biggest negative that comes out of this TFC season? Like, what is the bottom line disappointment? Because I feel like we have a lot of time to talk about where they go forward and what do they do to fix these things. But what will you look at as the biggest failure of this outfit?
I think that you leave the year still with a question of, are they rebuilding or are they, are they win now team? After a year this bad, you don't have
to have no clarity is a bit shocking, to be honest.
Yeah. And so I think it ends up being like a very simple way of saying it's a wasted year on multiple fronts. And I think that that's what will stand out to me, right? We all knew in 2018 that the group was good enough to come back and be competitive in 2019. And I think there's years for other teams where it's obvious that it's over and you're moving on. And in that year, that's where Jaquil Marshall already gets a ton of minutes. That's where, you know, Ralph Preso and Nobel Akello and Luke Singh and Jaden Nelson, guys like that, get opportunities. And then you look back 2 or 3 years later and you say, oh, that was the start of the next group. We're going to talk about, and obviously these are clubs in completely different worlds, but we're going to talk about Barcelona in the second segment, right? Barcelona is in a down period right now. But what Iniesta said was, look, this is where it was when me and Xavi came through. And the growing pains of us being 17 and 18 year olds having to play because the club was in a bad spot led to the greatest generation of all time. And that's probably what's happening again in Barcelona. Whether the club can even exist financially is another conversation. For TFC, you can't say any of that out of this year. I can't even tell you what they're looking for in a coach because I don't know if it's win now or rebuild or, you know, if the GM will be there or the president or any of that. And so I think that that's the most frustrating part of the year to me.
It's well said.
Can I just do this thing? And I know it's annoying, but you talk about the fight. Soteldo, Pozuelo, Richie, Oso. There are so many pieces here. Now, I think there's probably contract issues where it's really hard to make them better. And the biggest question mark is going to be Josie and Michael. Like, are they still on this team? Do you have a DP spot? Again, but I could list 5 or 6, 7, 8 guys that you want to be on your team that will be on this team next year. And I think that that, again, continues to be frustrating. And even if Pozuelo had been healthy this year, maybe it would have been enough to still contend for the playoffs. And that's, again, makes it harder to move forward. Sorry to pull you back into that.
You brought me back into the abyss. The double change with Josie and Paz in the second half, I felt strange. I was like, oh, what has happened? A huge fixture this weekend in MLS World, Hudson River Derby, Red Bulls, 1-0. Red Bulls cannot stop winning, but Cameron from the Discord asks, is Ronnie Delia in trouble, DG? New York City FC, I mean, I remember distinctly talking them up earlier on in the season as a team that looks like they could cause some problems at this point in the calendar, but it seems like the inverse has happened. What happened to them?
So I'd like to point out that I didn't pick NYCFC to make the playoffs preseason.
You've been bullish.
But every one of my picks otherwise has been incorrect, so I don't want to roll back out my preseason picks because I looked at them today.
So we can examine them. Yeah,
yeah, and be like, oh, man. And then it's like, I had Columbus in first in the East. I had RSL last in the West. Everything else was wrong except for that. So should Ronnie Dyla be under pressure and is he are probably two different questions because you're looking at a club that doesn't even have a home stadium. And they're bringing guys in the middle of the summer because that's what's best for CFG, not what's best for NYCFC competitively. So I think that that's really the tough part to parse. He should be under pressure because there's enough talent there to make the playoffs, to make a playoff run. And while it's not easy, he has not adjusted to situations. I think now of Anton Tinnerholm's injury, of Maxi Morales hurt in the beginning of the season when Tati's, you know, struggled at times getting him more help, all these things. I don't think Dyla has reacted to them well enough. And I think that's what's put this team behind and made things hard for them. And for that, I think he should be under pressure. Whether he is or not, I don't know, from CFG.
The games are coming hot and heavy now. Hot and heavy, I'm not sure. I think I watched Seinfeld this week. That's why it was in my head. But big matches.
Can I just throw out there, I'm watching La Liga right now, the Alaves Betis game, and Manuel Pellegrini is wearing a full tracksuit, Diadora, and it is...
He's rolling out of bed like that. He's barely applying any sort of hair product he's brushing the teeth, ready to go.
He looks glorious right now, but he does look like the guy who calls you to the back of the restaurant who just hangs out there all the time. And it's like, what are you and your friends doing? You guys being idiots? And just says that every time.
Seems like this happened to you many times recently. Okay. That's MLS coming up next. After the break, we chat World Cup qualifiers that night at BMO Field. Recap briefly Canada and US run, as well as look at some potential transfers and a couple of the European games that caught our eyes coming up next.
Julia Grosso from Vancouver to win it for Canada!
Canada came! Canada conquered! Canada gold at Tokyo 2020!
Welcome back to AFP. Well, David, we know you love international soccer, and so do we here at AFP, so we must shout out right off the top that the Canadian Olympic Champion Tour begins in earnest this week in Ottawa and Montreal. The Canadian women's team will play New Zealand, the Kiwis, in a couple of games. All 22 members of the team will be there, David, which I think is really cool. One of the cooler parts of this all. Sometimes when you have these tours, it's not possible due to other people's commitments and life, etc. So that's cool. Plus, Cincy, Captain Canada, Christine Sinclair, and the Portland Thorns just won the NWSL Shield. So she's coming again now, coming to this celebration, celebrating something else, David. Isn't it just beautiful?
No, it's awesome. And I think for all of us, it's probably a much needed pick me up at a time when it's been tough around all around the NWSL, of course, and around the sport. And I think this is a reminder of how big this game can be and how much it means to people and, you know, some of the legends around the game and a player like Christine Sinclair and what you can build around a player like that when you give them space and give them opportunity to do what they do best and give them the platform that they need. And it's also cool that these are not the cities we always talk about, right? Like, yeah, talking about putting the women's national team in Montreal. We haven't seen that in a while. And you're talking about Ottawa getting an opportunity to host this game as well. I think that's really cool. And that's one of the things that I think we're starting to see with 2015 Women's World Cup and now moving into 2026 Men's World Cup of spreading the game around a little bit more and making everyone feel connected to it.
Well, speaking of that, we should touch on what has happened in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. We previewed Canada-Panama. I was at Canada-Panama. Canada-Panada, as Nick coined it so eloquently. And it was a Panada. It was a Panada in the stands. I think that was one of the best sporting events I've ever seen in my life. As a fan, yeah. I was sitting in a good spot with some good people, but a very different group of people, if that makes sense, like different ages and people at different points of their soccer fandom. And I think it was really cool to see all these people get super hyped after a really upsetting beginning. Like, I think then when Panama scored, it was like, well, this could be horrific. But the vibes were really positive. And then the team did what the team does. And I mean, Alphonso Davies, that moment, I think will go down as like a signature heritage moment in Canadian history, not just soccer, but in general. Because then we have people on global news asking me to come on TV to talk about the team. I didn't see that coming. So I think it was one of those moments that goes beyond sports, and they're pretty rare, but it was a cool thing to be at.
Where were you in relation to the out of bounds moment, like in the stadium?
So far, literally impossible to see. So I'm at the full faith of the referee, and I'm like, well, I watched so many replays, and I watched some of the different calls, and whoever was on the CONCACAF World feed, I think, summed up my thoughts when he's like, oh, okay, it isn't. And then he kept going and went to score, but we couldn't see it all. We were close to the supporters' end.
The part that still sticks out to me is just every other player lets that ball go out because they have, one, no chance of getting there, and two, who cares? And that's the part to me of like, all of it is him to a T. It's the effort he makes on the play. It's the athleticism to get there. It's the skill to immediately take it under control. And then the rest of it is just pure world-class quality of beating a guy, of you, the way you use your hips to trick the goalkeeper, but still make enough contact to be able to beat him to that near post. That all of that is there. But just to me, I was sitting on my couch. My girlfriend may have been asleep. And I sat up because I was like, why are these yellow boots moving so fast? And I said out loud, like, is that Fonzie? Because I couldn't believe a player was even trying to get there. And then the rest of it happens. And it's the best goal I think I've ever seen in the region. Like, I just think it's on such a level and in such a moment too. And atmosphere, as you said.
So good that it rendered Tejan's fadeaway header, which was also insanely good, like rendered it to the sidelines like, oh, ho-hum, just a brilliant goal from another brilliant player. But their exploits and the fact that I think Canada now will move into the top 50 in FIFA's latest rankings, which is, again, insane. Like, what?
Yeah.
We were hanging out in the 110s and the 120s not long ago, but that happening has some impact on work transfers and how players can play in different nations, because some countries have some different rules when it comes to who can take up spots in their leagues. But it could be a huge opportunity for a bunch of Canadian players. And I think John Herdman was quoted saying he thinks a couple of his players will be making moves in January. Some interesting names, David. I guess the names we would expect too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all names of guys who are in MLS that it looks like they could play in Europe, and that's why the January makes sense, because it means they'll finish their seasons. Some will be out of contract. Most will have clubs that are willing to sell if there's a number that's available. You know, we're not talking about Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David. Those guys are already established and in their spots. But I think we have this list, which I think everyone's sort of seen. Cavallini, the rumors were Rayo Vallecano. That was this summer. I don't think we've seen those come back up more recently, but talk around La Liga has been out there. Richie, obviously, to Besiktas, because Atiba Hutchinson runs their transfers, which makes sense.
He's a legend. Sporting director, yeah.
Mark Anthony Kay to Belgium is one of them that's out there, and then Alistair Johnston as well, and the rumor next to him is Reading. I think the Mark Anthony Kay one, to me, is the least realistic just because of his age. And like for Genk, maybe Colorado's willing to sell at a number that it makes sense to bring him in and just have him be a good player for you, because they're, you know, there's at some point a Bruges and Anderlecht, a Genk. You need a player who's consistent, right, to put the young pieces around. But Colorado just gave up a bunch to get him. I think they signed him to a new contract in bringing him in. It seems a little unlikely to me, and I don't need it. Like, 3 years ago, I was like, Mark Anthony Kay should be in the Premier League. This guy's a stud. He's so good. I still feel that way, but I'm okay with him being an MLS Cup winner with him leading a team. I think to me is enough to see him at his best and still like respect that and enjoy it.
100%. I think that's totally right. And if he was going to go to Genk, it would be to be a squad player and play there. And like not go, because I think at 26, you're probably looking at not for sell-on reasons, but as a player. And that is less intriguing now, because you could argue he could play just as good football here, perhaps, if there's no moves to be made afterwards, if you're not looking at that pipeline that probably Tejan is looking at for what he wants to do. So it's a different story. Richie would be a massive loss to Toronto FC as a club. I think if you look at where they go from here and the positives about TFC, Richie's a big one. So it makes sense that he'd be sought after. But if it's not Besiktas, it'll be someone else. I feel like he could play pretty much where he wanted to right now.
Yeah, for Richie, I think if you're a club in Europe, you're looking at it and saying, he's played this position for how long? And he's already this good. Like, what you're buying is still an appreciating stock, even if he is a little bit older. I think it has to be the right club. It either has to be a team that's playing with five in the back so he can be a wing back, or it's a team where the crux of his responsibility is going forward, because I think he still struggles at times defensively. And if you're going to take him up levels, it's not going to get easier. The only reason it might make sense for Toronto is if the money you get to sell Richie is enough to be able to get a solid fullback and a good center back in, then it makes sense, right? If you can basically flip his spot into two spots, you're kind of probably hamstrung cap-wise that, okay, that's worth it, even though Richie's probably better individually than both those players. You still need to fill those gaps and those holes. And that's where it might be a bit of a godsend. On the flip side, he's an emotional leader. He's a Toronto native. Like, there's a lot that you want to keep him as well. But I think if he gets the options, he's going to go. And I feel like Toronto will be, I think Toronto will understand that and allow him to.
Right. Mark Anthony Kay is 1 month older than Richie, which I didn't realize. Yeah. So it's very interesting.
I think fullbacks are different than center mids. Right. Like, I think teams, one, you're not spending the same numbers on a fullback as a center mid in general. I also think if you can slot in quicker at the fullback position because there's less responsibility on you.
And Alistair Johnston is moving to play probably more as a fullback than a center back in a three pairing.
I would love him to be that, by the way. I think his best spot is right center back in a three-man back line, five-man back line, whatever you want to call it. I agree with you. I don't think that's what people are going to look for him. But when you see the way people use that position, you know, a pseudo fullback who can make runs forward, but he has to be physical enough and smart enough to play in the middle. I think he has all of that. The one thing I've heard from people who have worked with him in Nashville is he has a killer cross. He just hasn't used it in a lot. And so there's belief right. that he can be a legitimate chance creator from the right back or right wing back spot.
Those are the Canadians looking to go to Europe. Might as well go to Europe ourselves. Some banterific results. We talked about it briefly off the top. Manchester United losing to Leicester. Manchester United not looking great. I think there's some real, we've heard them before, but the calls are getting louder. The calls are coming from inside the house now, David, about the problems regarding Manchester United.
I want to read this quote. This is from Pogba. He said, after this game, we've been having these kinds of games for a long time and haven't found the problem. We've conceded easy and stupid goals. We know that the fans were going to push and put pressure on us, and we need to be more mature, play with more experience and arrogance in a good way by taking the ball and playing our football. We need to find the key for this change because we deserve to lose. I don't know if it's a mindset of the players. We need to change something. We need to find the mentality and tactics to win. We have to look as individuals and as a team to fix this. Finished with a dab.
He did dab at the end, right?
Yeah.
It was controversial, but he decided to
dab. Of course. They just didn't like how flashy it was on the dab. And I think that says a lot.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of people read into this like, oh, he would love Zidane to be his manager. But Zizou's not exactly a tactical wizard either, right? Like, this is just all about mentality shit.
But Zidane is the mentality guy, right?
That's what I mean. Like, this is all about vibes. This is not about, we don't have CDMs at all and need to play around that and maybe put Pogba there.
And I wonder if his use just of the word tactics is to make sure, if you didn't know I was talking about Ole before...
It's the coach.
Right?
The coach.
I'm going to use this word that can only be put on. I'm not putting this on Matic. I'm not putting this on Ronaldo. Like, this is, I said tactics, so look, everyone look left. And there's the little Norwegian guy. So that, I think that's the case. It's just wild. The biggest part to me, and you talk about the defensive midfielders and the issues, all that stuff, is just, they're one of the four or five most talented rosters in the world, and they just don't dictate games. They just lets the talent do what it can, but they just have no system and no style. It's just a waste of talent.
It's a bit funny as well, and it won't be funny perhaps for some United fans, but just looking at that team without Ronaldo, and I wonder if they would have been better off perhaps, but we all know how that played out, and he's there. So they have to figure it out. It probably means the new manager will come eventually, just not now. And that will make things worse because we've seen that happen so many freaking times. I mean, for all of the garbage Chelsea is accused of, and rightfully so at times, they don't wait. And it seems that behooves them well. I have two questions for you.
We might find out with that one again.
Exactly. Two questions for you. Is Mo Salah the best player in the world right now? And is Edouard Mendy the best goalkeeper in the world right now?
It's tough.
Because I will answer in the affirmative.
On both?
To both, yeah.
So Salah, the conversation is what? Lewandowski, Salah, maybe Mbappe.
Current form, which is like, if we can somehow add all the counting stats together, then I guess go off of club form as well. Not a lot of people are doing super hot.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, that's why it's tough. It's not like a knock on Salah. I watched Argentina last week, and Messi's still Messi. Like, they still, mm-hmm. you just give him the ball, everyone gravitates around. I mean, he's still the best player in the world. So, it's tough to say Salah. He's been in that top five conversation for, what, 4 years now? 5 years now? And
Chelsea sold him. Remember that?
Yeah. Chelsea sold a lot of guys. So I will say this. He wasn't good enough when he left Chelsea. He needed more time. I think he needed more experience. He also needed the right setup. The thing that Salah does well is he is able to do the things he does at a high speed. When the game is slowed down, he's not world class at dribbling guys and taking them on. He's able to do it at a high speed better than anyone else in the world. And I think he needed a Klopp system and he needed this Liverpool team to do that. And we saw a bit of it at Fiorentina when he went over there. But like, I don't think he ever would have hit these heights at Chelsea. And I don't think it's purely because Chelsea doesn't trust young players. I think it has to do with the soccer.
Circumstance, right? And again, it'd be totally different if Chelsea was like an abject failure who is like plodding along and not doing great stuff themselves. I feel like clearly what they've been doing is working for them and he had to find his own foot. I mean, KDB probably the same, right? So Mendy, I think, is a bit more subjective as well, as I think don't think the counting stats necessarily back me up. But I will say, as a keeper fan and as a fan of like the demonstrative, this guy is our leader, I'll go to war for him, the way he acts with his defenders and his team, like he's the dream. And they had no business even escaping with a point against Brentford. That's how poor they were. But Mendy was that good.
And I think he's never had a bad moment since he got to Chelsea, right? Like, that's what's so huge is he had to hit the ground running. One, at his age, he didn't have years to find his feet. But also what Chelsea was looking for, which was, we think we have a team that's ready to go now. We just don't have a goalkeeper. And so for him to come in to do all of that, and then now continue to, I guess you could say, get better or just even be more consistent is huge. He doesn't have a ton of games like this, right? Like, I don't think you think to yourself, oh, these are the 80 games that he won for us, where like Oblak has done that for Atleti how many times? And even like Chesney's done it for Juve now at this point a bunch. But to have a guy like that who makes zero mistakes, reads the game well, and then if he starts adding games like this to his resume, I think it's a legitimate conversation. I think Tammy Abraham and Ben Chilwell both jumped on Instagram and said he's the best in the world.
Ben Chilwell, screamer. Was that deflected? I wasn't sure if that was deflected in the end, that volley, but that was,
I couldn't tell well either. Taken.
Tammy Abraham, speak of the devil. Let's go to Serie A. Napoli winning 1-0. Victor Osimhen, when Haaland is sold, he will probably be the next guy to go for a boatload of money. You think? I think this guy is on a trajectory that will be starbound.
You have to be able to afford him. Remember, he went to Napoli for 70 million euros.
It's going to be a lot more, yeah.
So jeez, the number he came... It was a weird signing when Napoli made it, because it felt like you were signing your finished product that you were going to keep. And if Napoli does that, that's awesome. Because as you said, he's crushing it for them. And remember, this was the guy who did it for Lille before Jonathan David. David was signed to replace Osimhen, who was the archetyped for Lille. And he was the one they had built everything around of, like, not unknown, sort of basically given up on in Germany. And you bring him in and you rehab him a little and you put the right system around him. And now he's this guy. And I felt like he was going to be this guy. I think we talked about it at the end of last season with Napoli. You were starting to see it. Like, he was getting in the right spots. His body movement was right. He was charging at defenders. Like, he was doing all the things. It just wasn't totally coming off. And now it is. And it's pretty awesome. And I think the point is for Napoli to win trophies with him. And they're on board. They're on pace for it this year, and I think that's where this signing came from. And if someone wants to pick him off them, you're talking 110, 120 million euros, which now you're in Haaland, Harry Kane territory.
Controversy in Roma, Juve. Also,
did you watch
Mourinho
this?
Going. I didn't, so you have to clue me in. I also just want to say, I saw Mourinho talking some garbage about the Newcastle thing. God, wouldn't he be a perfect fit for that? Yeah. Isn't he the perfect manager for that club? But anyways, tell me what happened.
So in this game, Juve goes up 1-0 at home. Roma playing fairly well. Tammy Abraham had a couple moments where maybe he made the wrong decision, but they're getting in dangerous spots. He gets the ball. He beats a defender. He's coming into the box. He's got two defenders around him, Mkhitaryan to his right. He tries to beat both of them. It looks like Danilo slides him from behind and gets the ball, but knocks Abraham over. The ball gets pushed wide to Mkhitaryan with Chesney closing on him. We're talking 3 yards from goal on the right side. He chips Chesney. Chesney takes out his legs, and the ball bounces to Abraham. and Abraham volleys it into the back of the net. Starts celebrating, ref blows the whistle, penalty kick. So he waved off a goal that had happened to call a penalty kick for that team. And then he said he had already blown the whistle, so they couldn't continue on. And Roma ends up missing the penalty. It gets saved. Chesney actually makes a great save.
Wojciech forever. But I was watching Netflix, forgive me for my sins, and they had that bad sport documentary.
Yeah. I just watched the trailer.
Yes, I watched that. So now after hearing this, I'm curious about who's involved. Wow. Chesney is golden for saves in these weird moments. I feel like he would, this banter king would step up to the plate and make this even worse by saving the penalty.
And credit to him that the ref came over and said to keep one foot on, and he did. It was a legal save, and he goes down to his side. But, like, the ball is in the net. A penalty kick is not more valuable than that. And wait half a second. One, you have VAR. And two, and this is one of the things that drives me nuts in general about advantage. I don't think advantage is fair to teams that get fouled. Like, I believe that if you bring my guy down and the ball comes to me and I take a shot and it doesn't go in the net, I didn't have advantage. And I still think you should call back and give a free kick, because I think it's too easy for defenders in the way it's set up, or defending players, whatever it is. Like, advantage
too easy for defenders.
The advantage should be I scored. If I didn't score, then I don't have advantage. And it shouldn't be, well, you took a 1.5 step, so the advantage went away. We're on a new part of the play.
I'd be curious how many times it's too easy for defenders has been uttered in terms of what the rules have been changed for recently.
That's fair.
I think they've been getting a short end of the stick, but I see what you're saying. I definitely see what you're saying. I need to seek this out now because I feel ignorant, but...
Like, any time a person gets knocked down or shoved in the box, if it's 7 passes later and they haven't scored, then they didn't have advantage. And they should have gotten a penalty kick.
Exactly. Quickly, El Clasico this weekend, but stars of the show, friends of the pod, Real Sociedad doing the damn thing.
They're in first place by, I think, 6 points right now in the league. And we talked about it already on the show, as you mentioned. And we had Alex Janssen on the show to talk about it. And she covers them super well out in Spain. So highly recommend, if you don't follow her, to follow her. They won their first Copa del Rey ever during COVID. It was the COVID one. Remember, there was like 2 within a span of 3 weeks played.
Right.
So it was the one that happened. It was the 2020 one. And they tried to push it back so they could play with fans. It wasn't possible. They won it. They have not celebrated it. And then they did it this weekend because it was the first game since COVID that they had full capacity at their stadium, which is like 31,000. So they set this whole celebration up. They're coming in. They're first in the league. Everything's great. They get a red card. They're locked in 0-0 against Mallorca. And they scored a pretty bad, but it doesn't matter, like 95th minute winner. And the energy in the building is absurd. And it's awesome because it's basically like they celebrated twice. One is, crap, we're 9 games into the season and we're in first place ahead of these giants. And the other was like the emotional release of winning Copa del Rey and going through what all of us have gone through. And that moment that I think a lot of us are looking for. So it was epic, and it was definitely the moment of the weekend.
To close up, and this is a bit morbid as well, but I was thinking back to the last few sporting events before the shutdown, and Liverpool Atletico Madrid at Anfield was definitely one of them. I vividly remember watching that match and Atletico Madrid pulling off a stunning win. But I think there was a report released this week in the UK, and it attributed a lot of deaths. I think it was like in the 30s, attributed to that match taking place. Because I think the day after that, Mikel Arteta tested positive for COVID and the Premier League was shut down. But even then, when that match was taking place, everything was shutting down worldwide. And yet we had fans from Spain coming in and we had all those thousands of people together. But the fact that they actually were able to put a number of deaths attributed to hosting that event, I think was eye-opening. And again, I think they played this week, Atletico Madrid and Liverpool.
Yeah,
and
they play Champions League.
Some sort of acknowledgement of that, I think, would be good, because I think back and I remember watching that match and getting ready to lock down and buying stuff at the store and being like, why the fuck are they doing this? But here we are.
So. Specifically, there was the time when they were like, oh, there's a hot spot in Italy and Spain. You know what we should do? We should play an international competition in Western Europe.
Good Lord. All right. That is Europe. When we come back, it's the mailbag. Ask AFP. Welcome back to Ask AFP, your favorite mailbag in all the land. I am filling in for Nick as the Gunners play Crystal Palace, Patrick Vieira's homecoming. Bittersweet, David. I'm tearing up, emotional, hearing the crowd serenade the captain of the Invincibles.
Did you see the Ben White interview?
I did not. I did not.
So Ben White was interviewed, I don't know, on probably one of the Arsenal shows, but I don't know who it was. And they asked him something about this game or what it means or what people have said, whatever. And he basically was like, I don't watch, as he said, football. So I don't really know who Patrick Vieira is. And I don't know, yeah. Like, I don't know what that Arsenal team means to people.
Are you trying to get a reaction out of me? Like, am I offended? Ben White hasn't been reading his history.
Not really.
I find funny.
I just thought I'd bring it up for us to both know about.
It's interesting. I was watching NFL football and the commentator was saying he was speaking to the quarterback involved and the quarterback was like, I literally don't turn into any sports when I leave. Teddy Bridgewater said he found out about the John Gruden thing at the stadium the next day when other people told him about it. And I was like, does that affect you as a player? Like, can you be as good as you should be if you're that tuned out? I don't know. Food for thought.
Yeah. I've always thought about this because this has been a huge issue in MLS. Right. You know how we're trying to get people to watch MLS? We're also trying to get MLS players to watch MLS. And like a ton of MLS people will be like, oh, did you watch Man U this weekend? And I'll be like, yeah, what'd you think of the Montreal game? And they're like, oh, I don't watch MLS. It's gotten a lot better. It has changed drastically in the last 3 to 4 years, I'd say. When I first started covering the league, it was like everyone. And now the product is so much better. That players enjoy watching it more. And now they'll be like, oh, did you see how crazy that Austin FC game was on Sunday night? Like Vancouver, you know, like now that's happening, but it wasn't for a while. And it's like, I mean, you're watching soccer, so that's a positive.
They'll be like, oh, did you see that Vancouver Whitecaps game, mate? Just to make sure that they're still checking you in on the Premier League, right? Just to clue you in.
Listen, the lads will be lads, right? There's nothing you can do about that.
lads be laddin. Is a great name for a segment. Okay. I am the mailmaster, grandmaster general, postmaster general today. So I will be reading the questions.
That's the term in Canada.
Grandmaster general.
I'm looking up
Grandmaster
the
Flash. Grandmaster Flash is actually the name. Anyways, I'll start reading this. Matt from the Discord asks, did we get a glimpse of Alphonso Davies' future last Wednesday at BMO Field, moving from fullback to a false nine or number 10? He has the skill set, in my opinion. Will Bayern feel the same? Hot button question, David. Again, very interesting seeing this from the stands because obviously you get a sense of where Fonzie is moving and where he has vacated, but it's a bit harder to get a tactical read necessarily when you're there. And then when I rewatch the game, I mean, I think that's a different circumstance, but he can play forward. I mean, we've said this for a while.
He started and played as, a second forward, I'd say, the first 30 minutes of the game?
Right.
Is that how you saw it on the second watch?
Around there, right. Correct.
It's tough to say. He's the best player in the region. He does a lot of things well. You could kind of put him anywhere. If you played him at center back, he'd still be successful, I think, over the course of the game for Canada. Long term, we've had this conversation a bunch about Bayern. Maybe. They've done it before. Like they've moved guys in the past.
The position thing that they have with their other high priced player that can play the same spot could make this a possibility more than I imagined in the beginning, maybe a year ago. Does that make sense? We've talked about Hernandez before, but
do you know the full story now
of that acquisition?
Lucas Hernandez is technically under arrest for a year. He's supposed to go to jail for a year in Spain.
It's a restraining order. Correct.
A restraining order that he and his wife both got on each other, and then they went on vacation together.
The only reason he's
being put in prison and she's not is because he was warned about breaking it, and she hadn't been warned yet. So she got her first warning for the trip that he's getting put into prison to for a year. And I think this is like really happening. I think he's going to jail for the year in Spain.
He can't go back to Spain. Is that it, though? He can't travel there.
My guess is...
So he's safe. He's safe if he doesn't go back.
I didn't know that.
He plays for France. Yeah. I think it's one of those Spanish tax situations where, as well, the enforcement will be like, yeah. So if he's not arrested, then I think Davies should be able to move up in this spot against Bayern.
Is that, that is such an absurd sentence to have to say.
It was, so he was, he violated it by going on the honeymoon with his wife, who the restraining order was originally acted on, correct?
And like she that was also what, violated her restraining order because they got him on each other, which is so romantic.
Telenovela.
Yeah. Right. But she hadn't been warned yet. And so he's only being arrested, not for breaking the restraining order, but
I got you.
Ignoring the whatever. I didn't realize, though, that there was no like extradition on that from Germany. But
between,
that makes sense.
Between this and the,
I'm, you guys just watching. Scored? Are you not freaking out?
I was loving the hair, the head wrap Abba's got. I'm feeling this. 1-0 to the Arsenal. Fantastic. I'm trying to be professional, man. Try to keep it together. I was about to say, not a good week for football love. The Icardi-Wanda romance seems to be out as well. That woman calling someone else a home record as well was ironic based on how they got together. But anyways, you can Google that. Next question, another fantastic question. Cameron asks, which MLS head coach gives the best / worst press conference answers? You've got a huge trove of knowledge here, David. And when I was covering TFC, I was in many a scrum. So my knowledge might be a bit dated. I don't watch as many availabilities these days. So I'm curious who you have for best and worst.
It depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking to learn something or you're looking to be entertained. It's like Bruce Arena and Adrian Heath are highly entertaining, but they are not helpful in the things that they say.
At all. Condescending, mean, yeah. Sometimes. Ryan Nelson, super mean, I'd say, as well.
I would put Caleb Porter in that space as well. He's normally like pretty mad at you. I've never really been in a good press conference with Gio Savarese. He kind of always, he's very much a like cliches, we work hard, we don't care, next game type guy. He's really interesting to talk to. He's really interesting in interviews, but in press conferences specifically, he's like, you could, you know, take the book out of sports cliches, just flip to a page, and then that's kind of what you end up getting from him. I think Robin Fraser has gotten better, but he was in that territory as well, where he was like, I'm not going to tell you anything.
I used to do a web segment with Robin Fraser called Three Questions with Robin Fraser, and he was wonderful about it, but we weren't reinventing the wheel. I'll say that.
I think he's also different assistant coach to head coach, which
Correct.
Obviously happens to everyone. But yeah, those are some of them. I'm trying to think of like who I'd lock in as best. Jim Curtin's got to be
I
up
think
there.
Curtin was going to be my pick in terms of like he, and I think he's a bit similar to Greg in the sense that like he, whatever he may actually think, he shows that he cares about generally what you're asking and he'll try to educate less so than like shrug off or like not acknowledge the question. I think Greg gets to it. Greg knows how to obfuscate and like
kind of for sure. Way
pinpoint
different.
A question and take something away. But I think Curtin is a bit more open. So I was going to pick Curtin.
Yeah, Curtin will say more. Vanny, I agree with you that he'll stay engaged, but he will also revert back to either cliches or he will sort of just take it wherever he wants. Jesse Marsh was very good when he was in MLS of like, obviously he feels very strongly about things in soccer. So he like gives you those answers and gets fairly specific. In general, I'll say this actually, since we're talking about this, most MLS press conferences are bad because the questions are bad. And like I've been to an MLS press conference in most cities and you do not get information because, and this is a reality of the sport, there's not enough money in it for people to be full time. So you have people 100%. Who I respect the hell out of that. They take the time and energy out of their days to do this. They care about this. They care about the sport as you and I do, the growth of it in this region. Most of the questions are bad and therefore you're not really going in the right direction with coaches. And I'd say a lot of coaches, like people will say Bob Bradley sometimes doesn't want to talk. You ask him the right question and he'll explain it to you perfectly. It's just, you sit there and the first 5 of 7 questions are, can you guys make the playoffs? Do you care about making the playoffs? And it's like you people that are covering him 4 times a week. And it's like, you've already asked him this, you know, like what's the next thing? What did you see in the game? All that. And that's one of the unfortunate parts about the league. And I think one, that's a problem everywhere. Like, you watch a post game from a Premier League game, the person who's asking the questions in the tunnel, and they're like, 2 points lost, 1 point gained. Huh? And you're like, is that even a question?
I think this is what Naomi Osaka was also kind of getting at as well. And to a lesser extent, maybe what the Phoenix Mercury decided to do or not do after they lost the WNBA championship. But I guess the question is, the question's the problem, the fact that they're not making themselves available. Like, what should we do with press conferences? Seems like a major touchstone for how he covers sports going forward, because it's not to say at all that there's nothing positive to gain from them, but I 100% agree with with what you were saying about the question quality, and then the question quality kind of beating down the subject into a state where they really don't have to say anything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Because everything is so boilerplate and standard that it all becomes mush, and we're left with kind of nothing quotes a lot of the time, but we're not here to solve that, David. We're not. That's not my job, man. Man, as I watch Abba get nicked and get treatment, as I hold my breath.
Brian Schmetzer writes down the names and sources of the reporters when they ask questions, because it's how he likes to like visualize it. I don't know if it's the same with Fantastic. Zoom and COVID.
What a nerd. I love it.
I remember, I think it was MLS Cup in Toronto, and they set up the press conferences at the training center in like that hangar or whatever next to...
Correct.
Next to the training grounds. And he had this notebook, and someone asked a question to someone else. And after the question, he said, who was that again? And like, then the reporter was like, name. And normally in a press conference, you say your name. I'm David Goss from MLSsoccer.com, blah, blah, blah. And then someone later asked him, and he goes, oh, I just like to know who people are and, you know, where these questions come from and all that stuff. So I thought that was interesting. And obviously Schmetzer is always pretty approachable.
Again, from afar, I don't know him at all, but he generally exudes good guy vibes. So shouts to Brian Schmetzer. You got a question to end this, David, because you had to get your 2 cents in when I put out calls for questions like the jokester you are, but it is a good one. I didn't really think about it till you asked it.
And we sort of got into this convo before, but I said, if you're starting a team tomorrow, would you rather take Mo Salah or Sadio Mane?
Age, they're close, right? I think Mo is turning 30, or he'll be 30 next year, and Sadio Mane is 29. Wow, they're really close in age. You didn't answer. I want you to go first, actually, because
I asked the question. Fine.
This is called turning the tables, so I'd like you to answer.
Fine. Sort of like I was saying with Salah, where I think Salah fits a style a little bit better. I think Mane could be more dangerous with more varieties of teams.
Plug
so if
and
I was
play.
Starting a team,
Sadio
I would
have, yeah.
Yeah, I would have an idea of like how I want them to play, but I just think Mane gives you a level of flexibility of like, I think if you had a team that was more possession heavy, I think he'd still be super dangerous. I think you can kind of play through him a little bit more to create chances for other players, where Salah is more of pure goal scorer himself, but it's enough goal scoring that it's effective enough. But that's one way. And I think Mane has other ways that you can play through. And I think you've seen it with Senegal. Not that Salah hasn't been good for Egypt, but I just think you've seen the flexibility he has. But it feels kind of ridiculous to say when Salah is putting up numbers like he does.
Sadio Mane, 100 goals in the Premier League. What a player. What an absolute buy. This is all from Southampton.
Unreal.
A lot of good teams do this, but a lot of their stars are the same age. They're prime guys, and I think that we're around the same age, and it kind of makes sense. I got to pick Salah, though. I think it's a lot of due to, like, the star power as well. Like, if I'm trying to brand myself as an it club or an it team, I want Mo Salah on my team. He's just the guy. And his story, everything about him, where he comes from, these are all positives. So I think I'm going Mo, and I'm winning a couple trophies quickly, because I feel like, I don't know when he's going to drop off, but he's getting up there, I guess, in football life.
The question really comes down to, do you want to be able to walk into
longer.
A Senegalese restaurant and get free fufu, or do you want to walk into an Egyptian restaurant and get hummus?
Right.
And I think we've both shown where our cards lie.
Facts are facts. All right. A reminder before we wrap up, we are on patreon.com/footballpodcast. Podcast, said that like an American, in honor of David. On Discord. So if you join us on Patreon, you get Discord access, get the show ad free, get it a bit early as well. We got all our questions this week from the Discord as well. That's how much we love it. So join us and you can talk to us on there. We're on Twitter @afootballpod. And one last thing, a rating or a review, wherever you can get this podcast, would be wonderful. If we read them, means a lot when they're good, crushes us when they're bad. So please be nice. for producer Dylan on the ones and twos and for David, my name is Devang. Thank you so much for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.